So let's move on to the fourth section. And this is mainly about the whole issue of style. And I want to spend a bit more on this because I think this is an area where, if we're honest, most of us struggle. And the last thing you want is to submit something that you've really sweated over and then have your editors come back and say, or perhaps say to themselves in the editorial meeting, well, this is worthy but dull. That's how we describe it. Worthy but dull. In other words, there's lots of really good material in here, but it's so badly put together and so stodgily and clunkily argued that no one will ever get through it apart from the writer's own mother, and they might really struggle as well. So how do we improve our writing? Well, it's a case that some people are natural writers, and if that's you, rejoice that God has given you that particular gift, but realize that for most of us it's not the case, and writing is a learned skill. And even if you are a natural writer, you can get really so much better. Read good writers. C.S. Lewis I remember reading C.S. when I first read C.S. Lewis, I thought, yes, I could write like this. No way. he's one in a million at being able to put incredibly complex concepts into such simple language and yet do it in a way that really grips the reader. It's an extraordinary ability. Experiment with different methods and styles, subject matter, to find out what really you're best at. Find a regular outlet for your writing as well. If you can get into a position where you're writing regularly for a journal or a magazine, or perhaps you even have a regular spot where you're forced to produce something every week or every month, then that will really help you. Of course, a blog you can put anything up on a blog and hope that people will read it. But if you're producing stuff that's readable, you will build up a following and you'll get more and more people following you, and you'll extend your reading that way. And we'll talk a bit later about how to improve your readership. The critical friend we've talked about. So they're a friend, but they're not just going to tell you you're wonderful. They're going to be critical and help you to develop. And the discipline of putting aside time to do it, and then practice, practice, and practice, the three P's of improvement to really getting there. There's a book, a writer who is well worth reading, I think, is Malcolm Gladwell. He most famous for his book, The Tipping Point, but a really good writer from a Jewish background. He has become a Christian believer as well, and fascinating stuff he's writing now. But another book he wrote that is quite well known, but not as well, is the book called Outliers. And he's very good at taking a subject and really dealing with it in great depth within a chapter and making a point. And one of the sections in Outliers is a chapter on the concept of 10,000 hours. And the basic thesis he's putting, the message, if you like, would be that in order to get really good at anything, you have to invest at least 10,000 hours of time in it. And then he uses lots of examples of this in different fields. So he takes the Beatles band. And of course, when the Beatles burst onto the scene in 1964, I was in my first year in primary school in that year, and I remember because we all played George, John, Ringo, and Paul in the school ground and so on. But when they burst onto the scene in 1964, they had the top five singles in the singles chart and the top two albums. And what people didn't know was that they had spent 10,000 hours playing together, mainly in pubs in Germany, in 1962 and 63, before they burst upon the scene. So when they came there, they were already a really tight band. Bill Gates invested 10,000 hours of computer programming in the 1970s before he then developed into Microsoft and all the rest. Steve Jobs, similarly. So don't imagine that you're going to get there quickly. And the best writers, even those with great natural talent, have taken a long, long time to develop. And writing is like any other skill. It's like playing the flute, or being a brain surgeon, or being an Olympic skier, or whatever. You have to invest the time, and you'll get better and better and better the more that you do. So just some points on style. Short logical sentences. I'm going to unpack these a bit more. Active, not passive voice. Positives, not negatives. Simple words. And specificity, using the word that really describes what you're trying to say rather than a filler word. Now, sentence length. Look at this. I looked out of the window to see what the weather was like, and because it was fine, I grabbed hold of my fishing rod, ran out of the door, and started hurrying across the fields toward the river. Well, you understand the whole sense of that, but actually look at the second thing. I looked out of the window to see what the weather was like. It was fine. So I grabbed hold of my fishing rod, ran out the door, and started hurrying across the fields towards the river. That's three sentences with all the same words, but it's far more effective, and you see how variable the sentence length is. The second sentence is just three words long, but it's going to carry you through. And one thing we can do to improve our style is just to look at, you know, which long sentences could be broken up, and how could I vary the sentence length in a way. Or this one, Saunders was a political hireling. His enemies recognized this and accused him accordingly. Well, I think you understand the sense of it, but far better to say Saunders' enemies accused him of being a political hireling. He was. And it's funny as well, but there are only two words in the final sentence, but it holds you up. So the message is variable sentence length is far better. Active and passives, using the active voice for verbs. So not pray that decisions will be made, but pray that we will make decisions. Not pray that she will be guided by him, but pray that he will guide her. And so go through and look for passive constructions in the verbs and the pieces that you've written and think, how could I change that so that it's active voice rather than passive? And a lot of this comes out of being trying to be too clever and to write in a way that you think people will admire or respect. And in actual fact, what you do is you end up making it more complex and more difficult to read. So some things to avoid: uniform sentence length. I'll illustrate that more shortly. But repetition of words. Go through your, if you read through your piece and the same word is used twice even, or certainly twice in one paragraph and certainly twice in one sentence, you really notice it. So look for synonyms. If you've got the same word three times in a piece, think about what synonyms could I use for it instead. And that can really improve the style. Avoid cliches in whatever language. Changes of tense, especially within a sentence. Isn't it irritating when people start off in the present and end up in the past or whatever? Dead words. Very, quite, extremely, just, rather, really. I was watching I was watching one of those little sort of Instagram, Facebook videos, and it was two girls speaking, and both of them, English was not the first language, but one was clearly much better. And one of the girls used the word very again and again and again and again, and the other one corrected her with one word that described far better what she was saying. So try and avoid dead words like that. Just and really. There was a time in English evangelical Christendom when people would try to get the word just and really into a prayer as many times as they possibly could. You know, Lord, we really just think you're really just, O Lord, or something like that. I mean, it's a bit like the word like today. People put like in all the time. That these are dead words. Or unspecific words, thing or says or gets, where you could use a more embellished and a more colourful word instead, a more colourful noun than thing, say what it is, or than gets. Or inflated words. Words that could be replaced. So owing to the fact that, why not just write, what one word says that? Because. For the purpose of. Yeah, in order that, but even simply just the word for will often do it. So think about how you can contract down and simplify. Here's an example of the five words. This sentence has five words. Here are five more words. Five-word sentences are fine, but several together becomes monotonous. Listen to what is happening. The writing is getting boring. The sound of it drones. It's like a stuck record. The ear demands some variety. And then, now listen. I vary the sentence length and I create music. Music. The writing sings. It has a pleasant rhythm, a lilt, a harmony. I use short sentences, and then I use sentences of medium length. And sometimes, when I'm certain the reader is rested, I'll engage him with a sentence of considerable length, a sentence that burns with energy and builds with all the impetus of a crescendo, the roll of the drums, the crash of the cymbals, sounds that say, listen to this. It is important. And it's just a very artistic way of varying sentence length. And you've got some sentences there. One is only just one word, music, and others are quite long. But because it's variable, it engages people. The use of imagery has some great examples from literature. They had a house of crystal pillars on the planet Mars by the edge of an empty sea. And in that one sentence, your mind is being engaged to imagine this picture that's being painted. Or Dylan Thomas, to begin at the beginning, it is spring, moonless night in the small town, starless and Bible black, the cobble street silent, and the hunched quarters and rabbits wood limping invisible down to the slow black, crow black fishing boat bobbing sea. You know, it's painting music with words. Of course, these are real experts. Simplicity, it cuts both ways. So sometimes using shorter words can increase the clarity of what we're writing. So if you look at that first, you know, the infant observed the juvenile canine consuming its repast. And, you know, here's someone trying to be clever by saying, look at all these words I know, and I can put them all in one sentence, and you're going to come away thinking, what a wonderful command of English this person has. When, in fact, if he'd just said, the baby watched the young dog eating its meal, it's far clearer, and it says exactly the same thing. So, no, but words that are too simple lack colour. So the dog ate its dinner is pretty boring, but the Doberman gulped down a plucked chicken. You can visualise that. You've got a whole picture of things going on in your mind. And so the very best novelists are those who can create pictures and exercise your mind so that several times in one sentence you're imagining all sorts of things that their words are prompting you to do. The Gunning-Fogg Index, I don't know if you've heard of this, but essentially the idea behind this is that when you're reading something that has a very high fog factor, then it's a real struggle to read. You know, think of some of the Christian writing that you've come across and you think, I must, as a disciple of Christ, be faithful and persevere to the end of this chapter or whatever, but it's mind-numbingly difficult to read. And often that's because of a high, what we call, fog factor. And I'd sum that up by saying that a high fog factor will generally be lots of long sentences and lots of complex words of three syllables or more that are not familiar or easily familiar to the reader. So you don't count things like jargon. If you're writing a medical textbook and you're using medical jargon and it's got more than three syllables, it doesn't add to the fog factor, but it's unnecessary three-syllable words. The final number you get corresponds roughly to the years of formal education needed to read. So for example, if you've got a fog factor of 11, then a 16-year-old school leaver will be able to read it and understand it quite well. So you're writing at a level a sixth former would understand in the UK. But a 10-year-old will struggle with it. And someone with a PhD might think it's simple. And that's not necessarily bad at all. So a final year college student, 12 or 13, university graduate, 16, 17. Now, in other words, a university graduate can read something with a fog factor of 16 and it makes perfect sense to them. They're not struggling to read it. Now, the average UK reading age, and I suspect this might be true across Europe, is 9. So the point is, if you're writing at a fog factor level above your readership, then you're not going to communicate. Now, The Sun is a tabloid newspaper in Britain, and it has a fog factor of 8. Now, the journalists in The Sun are absolutely brilliant, incredibly well-educated, talented people, but they know how to communicate at a level that virtually every British person can understand. It takes a lot of skill to do that. The Guardian, which is a broadsheet, more serious newspaper, 12. And so someone, in their final year of school will be able to read and understand it quite well, but lower than that, they may struggle. That's the whole point of it. So for general readership, you don't want to have a fog factor higher than 12. And if you want everybody to be able to read and understand it, then a fog factor of 7 or 8 is what you should aim for. So here's some examples. Now, we took this out of a nursing journal. Now let me read it. Let me just read it to you. And although holistic care is often associated with fringe therapies, authors usually acknowledge that nursing and medical practice may be described as holistic without implying complementary or alternative therapy, and Holmes identifies the holistic approach as the cornerstone of both nursing and alternative therapies. Full stop. The word holistic is thus used in relation to both the philosophy of holism and alternative therapies, and not surprisingly, my previous boss at CMF used to say, if I can't understand something, then either they haven't explained it properly or it's complete nonsense. And I'll leave you to, draw your own conclusion. But I think here's a person actually trying to be clever, but they're writing in such a way that no one will understand it. And the fog factor of this piece is 23. And that's unreadable for just about everybody. Even those with a PhD will think, I'm not going to waste my time trying to get through this stuff. The person just can't write. Now, we think about the Lord, 10 Commandments, 5.6, and the Beatitudes, 7.2. And the message is that God speaks very clearly. And so so should we. And I have to say that this really helped me personally when I understood the whole thing about fog and how to avoid it. And that the basic message is, short sentences, variable sentence length, and don't use a long word when a short word will do.